You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hi, and welcome to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I am Grant Goldberg, joined by Spike Friedman, and it's going to be a raw, emotional Locked On Seahawks episode because the Seahawks did indeed miss the playoffs. They lost to the Cardinals, the Falcons beat the Panthers, and Spike, how you doing? It's not 24 hours after the loss yet, but we've had some time to reflect.
I've decided I'm mad about a lot of things still. I'm still in the anger phase of the morning. Mostly I'm mad. I hate Bruce Arians' face. I don't like that we lost to him. That's like the most visceral thing. I don't like that Carolina put in sort of a B-minus effort. I didn't enjoy that at all against Atlanta. They didn't not try, but like they didn't try. I don't like Matt Bryant anymore. I don't like that of the teams in the playoffs. Like, I like the Saints and the Vikings, but, like, other than those, and obviously I'll root for the Bills, but that feels hopeless in the long term. But, like, among the good teams, I don't like that my third favorite team is the Rams, probably, because as everyone on this podcast knows, I have a blood feud with the Jaguars that will go to my grave. Patriots and Steelers, obviously you can't root for them. The Eagles don't qualify as a good team anymore, running out God only knows a quarterback. And the Panthers betrayed my trust. The Falcons have betrayed me as well by winning and making the playoffs at all. So, yeah, I don't like that my third favorite team in the playoffs right now of, like, genuine contenders is the Rams. So that's where I'm at right now. I'm angry.
Yeah, it's just kind of been a whirlwind after the loss. I mean, it was a New Year's Eve loss, so you know, it's generally a happy time when the New Year is being brought in, but most Seahawks fans are stuck reflecting on what could have been during the season. But I have a silver lining because last time they missed the playoffs, they made the playoffs 5 years in a row, winning a Super Bowl, going to two. So yeah. We have that to reflect on as well. Immediately, I mean, the Seahawks, I feel like they could have beaten the Cardinals. I think they knew the outcome of Carolina and Atlanta towards the end of the game.
And did Carroll say anything about that? I should have watched his press conference.
I did not. I just kind of froze out all things Seahawks after the loss. It was a period where I was just kind of numb and just didn't want anything to do with football because, like you just mentioned, your trust was betrayed by multiple teams. Yeah. And I kind of wanted to remove myself from the situation. So if we want to look it up during the show, I think we can. But Pete Carroll played for a 48-yarder with Blair Walsh, and then after he missed it, he said, "Unbelievable." So I don't know if there's a more fitting way for the season to end.
Yep, strongly agree.
Yeah, it was just like they play that differently, obviously, if the game's closer in Atlanta, but it wasn't, so I mean, I think they're in a situation where, you know, if he makes it, it's great. If not, then, you know, who cares?
And well, and I think before, you know, we're going to get into the big picture. We didn't talk about doing this before, but I think we should still give out some game balls for this game just to, like, center our conversation around it for, like, a minute on offense and defense. Is that exciting to you at all?
Yeah, I think it's warranted because, you know, there were players that gave, you know, really good effort and made some really good plays in a game where, you know, ultimately it was disappointing.
Yeah. And offense for me, I think it was, I mean, God, it was such a disappointing game, but Doug Baldwin,
yeah.
Yeah, he flashed all over the field again. I mean, we talk about the pillars of this team, and we'll talk about that going forward, as there's been, I think, baseless speculation about Russell Wilson's future and very based speculation about Earl Thomas's future. To me, the two of them and Bobby Wagner are the pillars of this team, but that doesn't diminish the fact that Doug Baldwin is a crucial part of this team, and the way his contract is structured, he ain't going anywhere. So Doug Baldwin is going to be a Seahawk for a long time, and he's a very good Seahawk. He played out of his mind that touchdown catch. Getting both of his feet in was a ludicrous act of athleticism. The play calling all day was hot trash. Russell Wilson didn't have anywhere to go with the ball. And as good as the Cardinals' run defense is, their secondary isn't so good that our guys should be completely unable to be open against them. But Doug Baldwin was able to break that trend and get some windows that Russ could throw to. There were so many covered sacks. It was infuriating.
Yeah, I think that at a certain point, like, we talk about the talent on the Seahawks roster, but especially the lack thereof when it comes to the receiving core. You know, it's not ever that bad to where everything's covered on almost every play. So yeah, at some point, it falls on the scheming, it falls on the play calling, the coordinator. And, you know, that was a really frustrating thing to watch, like you were saying.
Yeah, and I'll say it's also the skill position, guys. I mean, Luke Wilson and Paul Richardson both had crucial drops. Like, just brutal final ways to remember their seasons, which were both fine. They both had good but not great seasons on the whole. But they're two of the free agents that this team has, like, the biggest sort of questions around. I mean, Jimmy Graham would be such a splurge, it's unlikely. I think they'd keep him at this point unless he comes back a little cheaper. I don't know if he likes our medical staff or something along those lines that would make it easier. I have no idea. But Wilson and Richardson are both sort of mid-tier guys, the sort of guys you don't like to lock up in free agency because you end up overpaying a little
bit.
Exactly. And leaving with that note of, like, oof, stone hands from both of them in crucial moments, it's going to be tough.
Those are big plays, too. Richardson had a lot of green grass in front of him, and then if Wilson just, you know, decided he was fine with catching the ball and going down where he was, then we wouldn't be having this conversation. But like I said, I try to remove myself as far as I could from the game yesterday, and I'm just reliving these moments as we talk live on air. And it's not
Bruce
very good.
Bruce Arians officially retired, final, going out on top, 8-8. He is a better Jeff Fisher in that way. That's harsh.
I mean,
Bruce Arians is so much better than Jeff Fisher, and also I hate his face, but just for different reasons.
Right, I think we hate both the coaches, but just for different reasons. I think that for, you know, as gross as Jeff Fisher's facial hair is, Bruce Arians' red face haunts my dreams.
Yeah.
I think that the thing is, like, the Seahawks value keeping the team together at a certain extent. And so, like you said about overpaying these guys, I don't want that to happen in a year where it's not something where you can just take the same team and just run it back. You have to, you know, shake things up a little bit. And if it takes losing a Paul Richardson or Luke Wilson because you're not willing to overpay them like some teams might be willing to be, then, you know, I think that's fine. I think that you'll be able to find a replacement. I think that there's enough free agents in the wide receiver market, and then I think you have an apt replacement in Nick Vannett and maybe Tyrone Swoops for Luke Wilson.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, yeah, exactly. The tight end position is less of an issue. It's also a cheaper place just generally in the draft. You can get a guy in the fourth round and plug him in. As we're seeing, like, that's what Nick Vannett better be ready to step up. If not, then we made a blunder. And you can't fix that blunder by splurging on Luke Wilson. So, should we move to the defensive side or should we take a break first?
We'll take a break first and then we'll move to the defensive side.
Ooh, what a tease!
Side.
Who's going to be our defensive guy of the game in a game that we lost to the Cardinals and let Elijah Penny run for 6,000 yards in the first half?
Yeah, we said 6 yards, not 6,000, so we missed on that prediction. But we'll get to the defensive game ball right after this. We are back with Locked On Seahawks. I am Grant Goldberg, at Grant Goldberg on Twitter, joined by Spike Friedman.
I'm at Spike Friedman on Twitter.
All right, and so we
sign up for Twitter. Guys, if you're off Twitter already, stay off. You're
a hero. If that's a New Year's resolution, then I think you should just stick to it.
Yeah.
I think that's the best course of action.
Maybe that's my New Year's resolution. Get off. My other one is... No, I'm not going to say what my other one is, but...
I think this podcast pretty heavily relies on that Spike Friedman retweet bump, so I think you're going to have to stay on it just for the sake of this show, just for the sake of retweeting it, if that's just all you do all day.
That's fine. That's fine. All day? But I, you know, I think I should be on Twitter less, guys. I'm going to be on Twitter less, maybe. Hold me to that. Grant, you're my sponsor now.
All right.
All right.
This is an unfamiliar role, but another guy who's familiar in this game ball role is Earl Thomas. He's up for consideration nearly every week. And, you know, we made a rule earlier in the season that maybe we should look for guys not named Russell Wilson and Earl Thomas to give these game balls to. But it's the last game of the season. You know, Earl played like Earl, so it's warranted.
Let's give it to Earl. I mean, yeah, like, anytime Drew Stanton took a shot towards the middle of the field, there were two, and they just were a brutal incompletion and a pick. And it's just like, you couldn't go near Earl. He also cleaned up what was, like, pretty middling run defense for a while, which was very irksome. We had irksome run defense.
Yeah.
And I mean, yeah, like, and so the front wasn't great. Michael Bennett was a step slow on a couple of potentially huge plays, which was very annoying. The linebackers were fine, but again, the quality of the Arizona rushing attack, given how decimated their O-line was, given the fact they were running Kerwin Williams and Elijah Penny and not David Johnson, meant that the fact that they were able to run the ball at all sort of invalidates the work of the interior of the D-line and the linebackers. Jaron Reed and Bobby Wagner had decent games, but overall not great. Sheldon Richardson had a pretty dreadful game on first watch. Justin Coleman had some good plays, but nothing great. Shaq Griffin had some real good plays, had that pick, but he stole that pick from Earl.
Yeah, so Earl was almost ready to field that ball like a punt return. Yeah. And then I think, you know, maybe, you know, Shaq Griffin, he was hungrier for that pick. I mean, he never had an interception before.
How many times do the Seahawks get in that position and then drop it? I mean, full credit to Shaq for absorbing the blow from Earl, not getting injured, you know, not injuring Earl, and not dropping the pick. Yeah, we lost the return, turned it into a bit of an arm punt, but, man, we've seen that go squirrely. Also, we glossed over the fact of how bad the offense was in the first half of this game. I just remembered one first down in the first half, and that was on a four-play drive where Doug Baldwin had.
The only points came from a Tyler Lockett kickoff return, which is so funny to say because all year we've been just begging him to keep it in the end zone. But, you know, shouts out to Tyler Lockett for
He gets the special teams game ball, and that game ball is then repeatedly thrown in the face of Blair Walsh, and then it bounces off Blair Walsh and dribbles out of bounds next to John Ryan 20 yards away. God.
Oh, it's dreadful.
All right. Should we get in just like an instant feeling of like what the heck needs to be done with this team?
Okay, so I asked this question on Twitter, and I'll bring it onto the show right now. If one thing, you can pick one thing out of all these things, what would it be? No Blair Walsh, no Tom Cable, no Daryl Bevel, no Brian Schneider, or no John Ryan. Which of the options are you going to pick?
Well, okay, so obviously I'm not going to pick no John Ryan, because, like, A, as crucial as the invisible, like, yardage of the punting game is, it's not that crucial. Also, he was, like, 22nd, 24th. Actually, he was probably the worst in the league of those. Oh, no, Blair Walsh was dreadful this year.
Yeah,
Blair Walsh, really by the end of the season, was truly, truly dreadful. So that's not good. And, I mean, like, so I'd take Blair Walsh, because, like, Cable and Bevel, like, As much as I'm done watching them, I'm done. I'm just done. Like, they're not objectively bad at their job.
We've had success with them before, too.
Exactly. So, like, I don't know. I mean, like, yeah. So, like, my answer is 100% Blair Walsh. But that's just, I don't know, man. I don't know. I think all those guys are going to be
It's
gone.
An all of the above kind of answer, like, but that's like the lazy answer, and it's to pick one. And I'm with you with the Blair Walsh, because that's something that, you know, directly played a factor in us losing games. And but I'll speak on that later. But yeah, we've seen the team have success with Cable, with Bevel, with Ryan Schneider, even John Ryan too. But, you know, I think just time has passed them up in Seattle, and I think it's time for a change. And we've seen how this team has changed over the years, and it's time for more of a shakeup.
Yeah, and I'll say again about John Ryan. Someone just posted this on Twitter that he had his lowest standard deviation of punts for his career, but that's actually a misleading stat for whatever that's worth. I don't know why I'm debating a guy on Twitter about punting, but a lot of where the deviation on punt distance comes from is about field position. Like, being very consistent within 45 yards is actually not that great. You want to be able to coffin corner guys, and you want to be able to turn out a booming punt. You want inconsistency. That's where punting has gone. Punting has gone to a place where, like, you look at what Johnny Hecker does, and the dude has, like, 7 different punts that he can drop at any time. Some of them go further, but they bounce straight out of bounds. Some of them have different types of backspin. Some of them don't have any spin at all. It's crazy. Like, you, like, John Ryan is a great punter for the NFL circa 2009. The NFL punting game has changed. And so John Ryan, you know, and he's old, and he's been great. And, like, he can walk away if see. Sorry, Grant. You're going to have to bleep that. Just a Seahawks. You're going to have to bleep my emotions about punting. He's a Seahawks punting legend, but he's not a great NFL punter at this point.
Yeah, I'd say that both Father Time and the NFL punting game has passed him up. I mean, let's see. We had a whole list of things that we could potentially talk about, but this is just raw emotions. Oh, man, and I think it's just worth mentioning on Blair Walsh's part, like, you sign him, you sign Eddie Lacy, and then you see Steven Hauschka make the playoffs with the Bills. And I get that, you know, the low-kicking game is, like, scary and dangerous, and it's affected the Seahawks at times, but we saw Blair Walsh directly, you know, lose the Washington game for the Seahawks. I think that was the most, you know, we've seen him impact the Seahawks game so far. And he's missed, you know, various kicks, you know, throughout the season that could have played a big part in the Seahawks winning a la the Atlanta Falcons game. And so, you know, it's frustrating having to watch him for the whole season because this team is so strapped for cash and kind of the salary cap has made life difficult on them, having, you know, so much money tied up to where you have to field Blair Walsh during the game. I think that it's something that immediately needs to change, and I'm glad that, you know, he's not going to be with the team beyond this season.
Yeah, I'm done.
Yeah, it's something that's incredibly frustrating, and we'll get back to you right after this about some more things reflecting on the 2017 Seahawks. Okay, we are back with Locked On Seahawks, Grant Goldberg, Spike Friedman, and Spike, I think that it's really easy for fans to look at, you know, one singular game or even a couple and point to them and say, well, that's how the Seahawks didn't make the playoffs. And I think it's an argument that holds a little weight, but you look at how decimated this roster was with injuries, and I wouldn't say they were lucky to have a winning season, but you'd think most teams would struggle to even get to 500 with as many core guys missing as the Seahawks did this year.
Yeah, it was something. I just saw the stat flash of, like, if you look at all the one score games the Seahawks played this year, they were destined sort of to end in the 8-8 to 12-4 range. So they're sort of at the bottom of their expected outcomes, even accounting for, like, and that isn't taking into account all of the injuries that they suffered if for crucial players. So, you know, but it also, I will say this about the injuries. Russell Wilson wasn't hurt this year, and right, that is a big old deal. That is, like, you look at a lot of teams, and, like, and we had to play them all with healthy quarterbacks, which is terrible, but the Packers, Houston, Philly,
Tennessee
for a little bit. Yeah, Mariota missed time, and then came back at, like, 70% speed, sort of like Russ did last year. You look at a team that, like, lost their quarter. Like, how much worse a season would this have been if we had lost Russell Wilson? Like, we had live money at the playoff table with 4 minutes left in our last game of the year. You know what I mean? Like, the fact that the Panthers got Matt Bryant to death, like, was the difference. I mean, if you're a Packers fan, your season is over when Aaron Rodgers' collarbone breaks. And, like, they hung on a little bit, but, like, you know, it's brutal. So I just want to say with the injury stuff, we had everything but that happen. But, like, thank God we didn't have that happen.
Yeah, and not having Russell Wilson get hurt, you know, it bodes well for his future. I mean, like, if you're injuring something, you know, you are at risk for re-injuring it and that being a problem for the rest of your career. And so I'm glad Russell Wilson was able to stay healthy. And as bad as the offensive line was all year, I mean, they were able to, you know, keep him healthy, keep him on the field.
I'm also getting live updates. I'm just updating people live on Twitter. Kirk Cousins just wiped all the references to Washington off of his Twitter profile.
Jeez.
I love that someone caught that. Yeah, man, he shouldn't resign there. They kept calling him Kurt. Like, what are they doing? He's good. He beat us. He single-handedly beat us when we still had our players. Ugh.
Yeah, I know.
Anyway,
we saw a drive similar, almost similar to that. You know, just this game. You know, Kirk Cousins led Washington down the field and was able to put points on the board to win the game. So was Arizona after a Bobby Wagner roughing the passer. Which is a crappy way to end the season because that's the lasting thought. Because, you know, Bobby Wagner should be the defensive player of the year in my mind, my biased mind that, you know, loves to watch Bobby Wagner play football. And I think that's a note that, you know, it's almost similar to Luke Wilson and Paul Richardson ending their seasons that way. I think that
Bobby Wagner is
going to be kicking himself for that roughing call.
I'll say this, though, about Bobby Wagner. There's a behavioral economic theory called the peak end effect, that our remembered enjoyment or utility from an experience is the average of the best moment and the last moment. And I'll just say this about Bobby Wagner, is that his best moments from this Seahawks season were so high that even though that last moment was like stupid and kind of bad, it won't really overwhelm the highly positive in a way where, like, if like your guys like Preach and Luke Wilson, who were like pretty good, and that last moment is dreadful, it really can throw off your thing. This, I think, but I don't think Bobby's going to get defensive player of the year, but I don't think it's because of that roughing the passer. I think it's the Rams game. I don't think he's going to be able to overcome having played in that game, honestly. If he hadn't played, I think he'd be more likely to get defensive player of the year because we would have looked just as bad against Todd Gurley, but it would have been without him there. Then he would have come back the next week and shut down Zeke, and everyone would be like, oh yeah, Bobby Wagner, he really is that good. Whereas you have now a game where he blew like five tackles, and everyone's going to be like, well, you know, he had that one bad game. Let's give it to Calais Campbell. That's my impression of awards voters. It's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, generally awards voters are pretty bad, so I think you hit it spot on. And I'm glad to see that you're a part of the pro Earl Thomas portion of that argument about him setting out. But no, I agree. I think that if you see the potential on-off impact for the Seahawks when Bobby Wagner's on and off the field, then, you know, that game probably helps him if he sits out. Another thing that is happening on Seahawks Twitter or in the NFL really is rumors of Pete Carroll walking away. I know he refuted them, but you know, it's something to think about, it's something to talk about. And I think that Pete Carroll shouldn't be done. I think that he has at least one more season in him. I don't know if he's gonna want to overhaul his complete staff if he's planning on staying one more year. But Pete's been so spectacular in his tenure with Seattle. I think he does need to make some changes to his staff and some tweaks, honestly, to his philosophy if he wants to win with this team and how it's constructed, and adding just a couple players here and there. I really don't think that Pete Carroll walking away should be a thing, but it's something that we got to at least talk about and consider.
Yeah, I feel like there's something a little overblown with his, like, won't change his staff thing, and I guess that just comes from, like, watching him at USC. And I guess the other thing is, like, with Bevel and Cable, there's this weird sort of middle ground with coordinators where you're not bad enough to get fired, but you're not good enough to get hired to be a head coach somewhere else. But, like, at a certain point, you're bad enough to get fired because the league has moved by you. And I don't know, man. They got to go. And I don't think Pete is utterly resistant to the idea. He fired his offensive coordinator after his first year in Seattle. He moved through a ton of offensive coordinators when he was at USC. Norm Chow, Lane Kiffin, Steve Sarkisian, all the greatest names of offensive coordinators.
Right.
So I'm not utterly concerned that he is unable to pull the trigger on either Cable or Bevel. I don't think he's going to do it because I want him to do it, but man, he had to have been frustrated this year. Like, you could feel it on him, and the running game never got going. Like, they didn't give him the type of offense he wanted, even though they invested so much in the offensive line. Between you know, trading for Dwayne Brown, signing Luke Jokel, drafting Ifedi, and drafting Posick, and re-upping Britt. That is a ton of resources thrown at that aspect of the game. And while the pass pro was better, you know, like Russell Wilson's pressure numbers were high down the stretch, but a lot of those were coverage pressures. So the pass pro did get better than when Reese freaking Odhiambo was out there. But man, the run blocking was dreadful. And it was guys like Justin Britt missing assignments. Justin Britt's been in the system for a long time. If the assignment is so complicated, Justin Britt can't figure it out, then the assignment is bad and should be reworked. Like, what are we doing?
Right.
Oh, God.
I want to, like, just add a little bit to your point about them not being super bad, but, like, being... Like, if the game passes you up, you're not bad, but you're just unfit for the game going forward. And if you're not a good fit, then you shouldn't be with the team if they want to win.
And again, Tom Cable sucks. He's a bad coach.
As many resources as Seattle's dumped into the offensive line, and you know this is the product we get, you know, over the last few years, then it goes further than the talent on the roster. It goes to the coaching staff, and you know, I think everybody's ears perked up amongst Seahawks fans when he was mentioned as one of the candidates for the Colts opening, and then this morning it's Josh McDaniels, it's Matt Patricia, and Tom Cable's name is nowhere in sight. But I hope that, you know, if that's not the avenue where he leaves the Seahawks, I hope that they move on from him.
Yeah, and he can go rebuild, you know, the coaching carousel is going to happen. Like, he can go back to Minnesota.
Yeah,
you know,
he can go back to Oakland for all I care. I just don't want him in Seattle.
Oh, man, that would actually, under Gruden?
I mean, like,
you got classic Gruden grinder in Tom Cable there.
Gruden grinder. I think, like, they got to, like, change the, like, you know how the NBA has kind of, like, gone away from home and away jerseys, and they've gone, like, with, like, statement icon. I think that they have to have, like, just Gruden grinder uniforms for the Oakland Raiders if Tom Cable comes.
Yep.
And, like, it's got to be, like, Chucky themed or something like that. I don't know. We're getting away from the point. I think that, you know, there needs to be widespread change amongst the coaching staff without Pete Carroll leaving. I think that, like we said, Brian Schneider and really the whole special teams unit, besides maybe the Gunners and Deshaun Shedd, need to, and Tyler Lockett for that matter, because, you know, there are signs of life with him. They need to go. I think that, you know, this team was meddling all year in special teams, and they were bad. They were straight up bad. And so
it cost him the last game of the year. And man, the Panthers were in that. I mean, if Matt Bryant misses two field goals down the stretch and Cam Newton is throwing those balls in the end zone to win that game, like, and we lose because of bad punt related field position,
that gives so terrible field all game.
And then freaking, and then Blair Walsh again. Like, God, that would have been really worse. Like, I'm grateful I'm secretly grateful to the Panthers, because I would have lost my mind. You know what? Keep pounding.
Yeah.
Panthers for life.
They kind of stopped pounding, or like kind of like half-heartedly pounded during the game.
They really stopped pounding.
Yeah, and you never want them to stop pounding when there's playoff hopes on the line. But and even if is it Phil Dawson, the Cardinals kicker?
Oh man,
if he misses a field goal or two down the stretch, you know, it's a way different game. He was automatic all game. It was just a bad game.
Cardinals just put in a request to Eagles quarterbacks coach John DeFilippo, Filippo. He's like he's the next McVay or whatever. Man, if our division ends up with Shanahan, McVay, and
McVay 2.0.
Come on. Like, we gotta,
That just is more reason for the Seahawks to spark change and not just run it back with the team that they have right now.
Yeah, go get the next McVay 2.0.
Go get Jim Caldwell as your offensive coordinator. I don't know.
I would love to find a young, hungry guy and not Jim Caldwell. But, like, Jim Caldwell's good. I don't know if that's what Russ needs. Maybe it is. I don't know. Whatever. Just stop. I need to not live through this again. I think that's my big takeaway from the season. Like, it wasn't the worst season, and by, like, normal team standard, it's fine. But, like, God, I can't live through it again.
Yeah, and like we said, all show, I think that, yeah, they need to make some changes. I think that it starts with Daryl Bevel, it starts with Tom Cable, and, you know, we'll see where this offense, this offseason takes us. It's a long time. It's the day after the Seahawks season ended.
Guys, what about the day after, you know what I mean? That's tomorrow. So we'll be back to the Seahawks again.
But
I think we're 4 days this week. Our schedule might change. We will let you know by the end of the week how much Locked On Seahawks you can expect in a Seahawk-less playoff world.
Oh, that's a bad world. I don't want that to be the thing going on in the future. I think that this team can make the playoffs next year. They just need to make some changes, I think.
People make the comparison all the time to, like, Joe Flacco with Russ, but the comparison... Ooh. Is Ben Roethlisberger. Like, Ben Roethlisberger's had his ups and downs, but that is a good team. Like, they've had good teams, and, like, settle down. Everybody's got to calm down. Yeah, 9-7. We went 9-7.
You can trade Joe Flacco. You can't trade Russell Wilson.
Well, you can't trade Joe Flacco because you signed him to a crazy contract.
Right. But anyway. Contracts are moved. Players only. No, you have to trade Joe Flacco.
Well, they can't, man. I'm telling you, they're stuck with Joe Flacco.
I'm talking Madden salary cap off.
You gotta turn it on, man. You gotta live that life. Live on the edge. Make your mistakes. Live with them.
Yeah, Jesus. Okay, I'm gonna cut us off. I think that, you know, we've talked long enough. And yeah, thank you guys for listening all year.
Yeah,
I really appreciate everybody that's had, you know, listened to the show, downloaded the show. Commented.
If you made it to the end of this episode, tweet the word. What's a good word? Tweet the word. What's a good word that people should
hashtag
tweet?
Hashtag Fire Bevel. We're gonna bring that back.
It's gotta be something that nobody would know unless they got to this part of the podcast.
All right, banana bread.
Dude, I was thinking banana, and I was like, I don't know, but yeah, tweet banana bread at me and Grant. And I don't know what you're going to get, but you will get a shout-out on next week's or tomorrow's Locked On Seahawks. Anyone who tweets banana bread at us gets a personalized shout-out and a pun based on your Twitter handle on tomorrow's podcast.
Wow, that's a heavy ask.
Well, it is because, like, honestly, after a loss like that, the last thing I would want to do is, like, wade through a podcast talking about the loss. So if you made it, you are a hero, and I respect you. I fear you, and I will do a pun on the name of your Twitter guy on next episode.
Yeah, and if you can leave the word banana bread in a 5-star review on iTunes with your Twitter handle in it, and you'll be entered to win a Pro Football Focus Edge membership. You can look over all the stats from the Seahawks season this year and compare it with other stats, see what you like best. You can go on draft.com, and you can play some drafts. It's not just NFL. It's, you know, NBA too, and I think that if you use the promo code LONFL on your first time, you can get a full money back return. So, yeah, go ahead and use that. And just, like I said, thank you guys for listening. We really appreciate all the feedback you guys give us, whether it's constructive criticism, 1-star reviews. No, we don't appreciate the 1-star reviews. Just any type of feedback we appreciate. I know I'm speaking for myself and Spike when I say that.
Indeed. Indeed. All right, man. Yeah.
All right, for Locked On Seahawks and the 2017 Seattle Seahawks season, I'm Grant Goldberg signing off.
I'm Spike Friedman, also signing off.